It's a little too much.
Welcome to the June 4th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules, and we're at the moment convened as a subcommittee so we can take testimony from some of our representatives who need to get back to the floor where they're still voting on bills. And so let us start with opening a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 21. And Representative Springer, if you'd like to come forward. And Erin, briefly, what is this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 21 expresses support for and gratitude to citizens of Compact of Free Association Nations residing in the United States.
Great. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and member of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Springer, State Representative from House District 17. I'm from SIO. And I have with me here, and I'm going to work very hard at this, Hiroshi Yamamuro, the Minister of Public Works in the Marshall Islands, who actually just flew in this morning for this. So I just want to set this up a little bit about what we're talking about today and why we're talking about this. I was approached quite a while back now, getting close to 2 years, by Lloyd Henyon, actually, from the Linn County Democratic Party, and said, have you ever met these folks from the Marshall Islands? Do you know anything about this? And I'm embarrassed to say I said no. And I didn't. And he started to unfold a story for me that was absolutely phenomenal. And a little disturbing, a little inspiring, pretty amazing story. And so what this resolution does is it's the first step. It is to a step to acknowledge and educate, frankly, not only myself, but my colleagues and many others across the state about the role the people from the Marshallese Island play with and in our government, and the role we play with and in their government. So between 1946 and 1958, the United States Atomic Energy Commission established the Pacific Proving Grounds in the Marshall Islands, where 67 atmospheric nuclear weapons were tested. These nuclear tests were conducted on a number of the islands. Some were inhabited, and some were not even evacuated. Now, I did some work, it's been a few years back now, with the Atomic War veterans. And they came to me and they were discussing some of the issues that they had had. And without going too far back there, sometimes in the past, I don't think as a government we have treated certain people well. And one of those groups is the Atomic War veterans, and another group are the Kofa Island folks that I'm going to talk about. So when Lloyd started talking to me about this, I said, you know, I want you to reach out to some of these atomic war vets. And I want to make sure they're on board because they were there. Well, I've got to tell you, that was the beginning of a pretty amazing relationship. In fact, I will end with reading, three brief paragraphs from Fred Schaefer, who is the national commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, who couldn't be here today. But we're talking about three groups here, the Republic of Palau, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, and the Federated States of Micronesia, and these are known as the Compact of Free Association Islands, COFA. And the COFA Treaty allows island citizens to enter the United States without visas to study, live, and work, and to access available services here in the states. And I believe it was in the 13th session that we passed a law approving COFA citizens for extended driver's license, just like folks that live here and are U.S. citizens. They were going each year to renew their driver's license, and there was no reason for that. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what some of these folks do. Because of some of the things that occurred in the time period that we're talking about, the economy, the education, many areas, many of the infrastructures on those islands are compromised. And many of the folks from the islands join our armed forces, and this absolutely amazes me. They join per capita at a rate greater than United States citizens do. So I want to leave you, as we talk about this resolution, with a thought here, and I think it is the most profound line in this resolution. We express our deepest appreciation for the Kofa Islanders, deepest appreciation for their extraordinary commitment to the service and defense of our nation. I think that's a pretty profound statement. So let me read Fred Schaefer's statement here very quickly, and then I will give it to the committee assistant to enter into the record. And there's a lot of pieces I'm not covering here because there's experts in the room that need to cover it. Senator Dianne Rosenbaum and Senate Rules Committee. To the Honorable Senator Dianne Rosenbaum and Committee, as the current national commander of the Atomic Veterans Association, it is my privilege and responsibility to let you know that our national association is in full support of both HCR 21 and another bill, House Bill 2522, providing basic quality health coverage for Oregonians from the Compact of Free Association Nations of Palau, Micronesia, and the Marshall Islands is the responsibility of our nation. Atomic veterans were there on the islands participating in the atomic blasts and then trying to clean up after the blast. These same veterans have encountered many of the health and mortality issues that have been visited upon the islanders and their descendants. The atomic testing which occurred on their islands has left their homeland uninhabitable for thousands of years to come. Those who lived for countless generations on the islands used as nuclear test areas have died there or immigrated legally to Oregon and other states where many live and work for marginal wages. Many cannot afford health insurance, even though many of their health issues can be traced to the radiation exposure suffered upon them and their recent ancestors. We thank you for your strong support of HCR 21 and House Bill 2522 and request that your efforts continue on behalf of COFA. It is signed sincerely, Frederick Schaefer, National Commander, National Association of Atomic Veterans. Colleagues, this passed out of the House, off the House floor unanimously. I certainly encourage your support on this resolution, and I look forward to you learning some of the amazing things I have learned from my new friends.
Thank you, Representative Springer, for taking on this issue and bringing this to us. And is there any senator that you've particularly been working with on this when we get ready to assign a carrier? Because it doesn't look like we have any Senate sponsors on it right now. So
I'll carry it, ma'am.
Sounds like, yes, it sounds like Senator Boquist
would be very happy. I was going to suggest Senator Boquist carry that.
To do it. Okay, great.
I unfortunately have been there.
Okay.
I'm not sure my length on Johnson Atoll is detrimental, but I have spent a considerable amount of very enjoyable demining time in Palau.
Mm.
So
okay.
I'm quite familiar.
Well, that will solve that problem. Okay, well, thank you again. We'll let you, unless there are any questions for Representative Springer, we'll let you go and get back to your floor session.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for joining us. And did you wish to testify? We can have you wait just a minute. We do have one other representative who needs to go quickly, and then so if you could just wait in the front row, and then we'll call you back up as soon as we have the representative.
Thank you.
Okay, so I will leave that public hearing open and also open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 23 and call Representative Nierman up. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I bring to you today House Concurrent Resolution 23 honoring Ron Post. Ron Post is a constituent of mine. He's also a constituent of Senator Boquist. And I'll just read a little bit of this just to be brief here. But in 1979, Ron Post was a successful businessman living in West Salem. And one night when he was watching the news, he saw the horrible story of the killing fields in Cambodia and the terror of the Pol Pot regime, which was causing a mass exodus of Cambodians to Thailand. It just came to him that he had to do something. Within weeks, he had assembled a team of doctors, nurses, and EMTs who he shortly thereafter flew to Thailand and worked in a temporary shelter for a few weeks. And at that point, he thought he was done. And then came the famine in Ethiopia, and he took teams there. And then came the Mexico City earthquake, and he took teams there. At this point, it became clear that he needed to found an organization. And so he founded an organization called Northwest Medical Teams. It's now called Medical Teams International. He's worked in the earthquake in Soviet Armenia. And one of the reasons that he was able to do that was because he had built such a trusted organization. And so it was the only American organization that was allowed to go into Soviet Armenia. He's now retired, but he's built this organization, and this is something that I think that he should be honored for. One other thing that not necessarily that he should be honored for, I'll leave that up to the committee, is he's also the father of Representative Bill Post. Anyway, I hope I hope you'll support this resolution. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Representative Nierman? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we'll thank you and let you get back to your floor session.
Thank you, Chair.
And I'll close the public hearing, and while we're on this, why don't we just open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 23, and...
Madam Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 23 to the floor with a do adopt.
Thank you. Senator Boquist has moved House Concurrent Resolution 23 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And Senator Boquist, since...
Yes, ma'am. It's my turn
in
my district.
Yes, great. Okay, Senator Boquist will carry, and I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 23. Now, let's see. We do have Senator Hansel here on several resolutions. Senator Hansel, do you have time for us to just complete the public testimony, and then we'll be able to dispense with HCR 21? So let's see. I'll call again Hiroshi Yamamura and David Antak, if the two of you would like to come forward. I'm sorry. I don't know. These are the two people that we have signed up to testify, so... Hiroshi, are you planning to testify? And then, if there's a third person who wants to testify, we can just add you to the list, Lloyd.
I prepared to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't have any written statement in front of me, and the notice was given to me, short notice, so I will yield the floor to Mr. Anitok and Anin.
Oh, okay. Could you just say that your name for the record?
My name is Hiroshi Yamamura. I'm one of the ministers from the Marshall
Islands. Okay. Well, thank you for being here in support.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Chair Senator Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Senator Frere-Oley. My name is Lloyd Hinion. I'm a member of the COFA, Alliance National Network of CAN, and that's a button I sometimes wear around the building. With me today is David Antak, president of the Oregon Marshallese Community and past president of CAN. And we are really honored to have the Minister of Public Works with us today. We met with the governor a little earlier, but the minister's plane got in a little late, but I want to first say that I'm deeply appreciative of Fred Schaefer, who is the commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, for supporting the Marshallese quest to reveal the disastrous effects that U.S. bomb testing had on the islanders and how those tests were equally damaging to the American servicemen and women involved in the testing and cleanup missions. It was through Fred Schaefer and his National Association of Atomic Veterans that Representative Springer became acquainted with the serious and continuing problems that these people all face from the pernicious effects of exposure to high radiation that still exists in the islands. The Marshallese people cannot thank Representative Springer enough for this powerful resolution, which serves as a strong memorandum to the Oregon legislature of just how serious the consequences of our bomb testing has been in the Marshall Islands. Shortly after I hired a Marshallese woman to take care of my aging mother, who died about a year ago, I became aware of some inexplicable oversights in our treatment to this population. There are obligations that we have shirked that seem totally inconsistent with our treaty that we have with them. For example, I learned that we were treating our legal COFA residents like undocumented aliens and issuing only temporary driver's license cards. I felt it was our responsibility as Oregonians to assist this community with navigating the pathway for passing a state of Oregon bill to correct this injustice. I want to once again express our deep appreciation to the 2013 Oregon legislature for righting the driver's license injustice by passing 2517 unanimously. Because of Oregon's legislature took this action, the COFA residents now can live more freely among us as they find it a bit easier to get apartments, bank loans, and even jobs. Our CAN group knows that a huge issue was the removal of the COFA neighbors from the Medicaid of 1996. They are taxpayers. They live in and work legally among us. They also recognize that nothing was going to change due to the gridlock at the national level. Just like the driver's license issue, it's up to each of the states to correct this dreadful oversight. And we also need federal help. We recognize that. We believe passing House Bill 2522 once again allows Oregon to do the right thing for the health care needs. And in this case, doing the right thing is by far the cheapest thing. By discerning eligibility, Oregon will take important steps in correcting another important oversight that has been allowed to continue for far too long for these people to whom we owe so much. I ask each of you to join me in supporting this resolution. And so I want to close by thanking Representative Springer for helping to enlighten all Oregonians about our past with the Marshallese people. And I want to thank you all, Senators, for listening to us.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Thank you. And please go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is David Anatok, for the record. As Lloyd Enyan has mentioned, I'm the president for the Oregon Marshallese community and the past president for the COFA Alliance National Network. ACR 21 is a big deal for us, mainly because, again, as Representative Springer has mentioned, it's an acknowledgement, it's the first step forward to know that the COFA folks are amongst us here in Oregon as Oregon residents today. Some of the words have been mentioned already with what we work, you know, how our work fields are with healthcare, assisting with nursing homes, some of the labor works with Truth Brothers, that's where most folks work in. Today, some of them have very little or no health coverage at all. But this resolution, again, will help towards supporting the knowledge amongst the public, letting people know that we're amongst here, we're here legally and providing to the society and economy here in Oregon, and are happy to be amongst folks here and calling Oregon as our second home now from the Marshall Islands. So with that, I yield back to you folks, and if you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for your testimony. Do you have any questions?
No, ma'am. I just want to thank the Minister of Health for being here today and appreciate you attending.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you all for your testimony. I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 21. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 21 to the floor with the be-adopted recommendation.
Okay, Senator Farrioli has moved House Concurrent Resolution 21 to the floor to be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And Senator Boquist, I heard you volunteer earlier, so we'll assign you as our carrier, and I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 21. And I think next we'll go to Senator Hansel, who I know is here on Senate Resolutions 3 and 4.
3, 3, 4.
and House Bill 3348. Okay, so I'll open. So let me open a public hearing on Senate Resolution 3, Senate Resolution 4, and House Bill 3348. And Senator Hansel, if you'd like to come forward. Thanks for your patience, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. I appreciate the opportunity to come. Let me, if I may, take Senate Resolution 3 and Senate Resolution 4, kind of discuss them together. And part of the reason why it's coming at this time is that we were hoping to get the primary individuals here to be able to honor them. Shortly after Oregon quarterback Marcus Mariota was received the Heisman Trophy, I thought it would be altogether appropriate and fitting that we do a resolution honoring his achievements, not only for that, but for his outstanding career at the University of Oregon. He's a role model. He's a great citizen and has done so much for the state. While I was in the early stages of preparing that, a friend of mine who is a graduate of the other university in Oregon, that's a D1 school, Oregon State, suggested that we look into also recognizing the first Heisman Trophy winner from the state, Terry Baker, back in the early 60s. And I thought that was a great idea. We could recognize there's about 40 years in between or so, 40 plus, if we could do both of them at the same time. We did the research, and we discovered that although he was certainly honored, a Senate resolution had never been presented for Terry Baker in that award. So concurrently, together, we began to move both of them. You're probably aware that Mr. Mariota is very busy. The draft and everything, we kept waiting. We said we could schedule around any time you'd be able to make it. And it finally came down, working with his agent and others, that it just wasn't going to be possible to have him here. So we began to, and we had made contact with Mr. Baker, who is now a lawyer in the major firm in Portland. And I'd had correspondence with him on email about if he could make it as well. He deferred from coming. He felt two reasons. One, even though he hadn't received the Senate, he's very resolution, he's very honored to receive it even now. He had had a lot of recognition here in the Capitol when he won the award, and he didn't want to, as humble of a man as he is, to detract anything from Marcus Mariota's award as well. So both of them declined to be here, which then we decided, well, let's go ahead and move the two Senate resolutions. So Senate Resolution number 3 recognizes the latest of our Heisman Trophy winners. We've only had two, which is presented to the best collegiate football player in the United States for that year. And then Senate Resolution number 4 recognizes Terry Baker from Oregon State, who received it but had never been recognized by the Senate in this way. So those are the two Senate Resolutions, 3 and 4. On the House Bill 3348, it comes out of the House. It also has to do with the University of Oregon. On March 10th, 2016, we have the centennial of Mighty Oregon, which is the Oregon fight song. It was first played for the University of Oregon on March 10th in 1916 for the first time. It was written and conducted and played by the university band. It was written by Mr. Perfect. And it was met with enthusiastic response, and several encores were given. So for the past 99 years, since it was first introduced, the song has become an anthem and a rallying point for the University of Oregon students of each generation. By passing House Bill 3348, we established March 10th as the of each subsequent year as a Mighty Oregon Day for our state in time to celebrate the centennial next year. Designating March 10th of each year as a Mighty Oregon Day gives us a permanent place on the calendar to rally alumni, students, faculty, and many Oregonians whose lives are improved by the University of Oregon. I might say parenthetically, my wife and I met at the University of Oregon, and we're both proud graduates. By celebrating this century-old anthem, we celebrate our great university, which calls us to do mighty things long after we leave campus in Eugene to make our mark on the world. For those of us who are proud of the University of Oregon, our alumni, student, and faculty, as well as those of you who are Oregonians who respect this institution of academic excellence and our superb sport team of celebrated innovation and athleticism, please move HB 3348 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. I appreciate it, and I would be honored to carry it if you so wish. Thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Do we have any questions for Senator Hansel?
Senator Lucas? Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. I just wanted to state for the record, because I noticed the statement that the mighty Oregon senator did happen to mention he is from University of Oregon and, of course, all of that stuff. And I just want to remind the members and those in the audience that he did make mention that really the individuals who graduated from Oregon State, like myself, are the humble ones.
Okay, we'll note that for the record, Senator Boquist. Senator Hansel, you don't need to come in on that.
I choose not to, thank you.
Wise choice. Okay. Okay, I don't see any other questions for you, so we'll thank you for your testimony.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Farioli.
I was going to ask the good senator from Eastern Oregon if the case made by the good senator far to my right, just because the folks from his alma mater have so much more to be humble about.
Those of us who have done great things will let you know someday.
Madam Chair, since I need a lot of votes on this right now, I choose not to get
less is more at this point, Senator.
Yes.
You'll
correct.
Notice the quorum here is made up of your colleagues.
I do. I can count.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Hansel.
Madam Chair, I perceive that you're the swing vote in this committee, and the other duck left the room. So
that's more power than I'm prepared to handle right now. So, okay, we do have Craig Campbell signed up to testify on SR4. Did you want to testify?
Mr. Campbell, be aware of swing votes.
Yes, indeed.
Madam Chair, I promise to keep this brief for the record. My name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA in support of SR4, the relationship being that Terry Baker, in addition to being a Heisman Trophy winner, has also been a member of the AAA National Board for 21 years, served as its national chairperson, has served on the AAA Oregon-Idaho board for 27 years, and is its current chairman. And as their lobbyist, it would be remiss of me not to take any opportunity to support anything that acknowledges his accomplishments. And so I will leave any further comments other than the fact that as a duck, I am trying to heal the breach by being here in support of a beaver. And I will answer any questions, doubting that there will be any.
Okay. I don't see any questions for you.
We're giving him a pass.
Yes, you've got a pass. I think you should take it. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Resolution 4, close the public hearing on Senate Resolution 3, and open a work session on SR3 and SR4. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that SR3 be sent to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli moves SR3 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion?
This is the University of Oregon, right?
This is Marcus Mariota. Yes. Okay. No. Seeing no objection, motion carries. We'll ask Senator Hansel to be our carrier. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move SR4 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
And Senator Farioli has moved SR4 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion?
No, ma'am.
Motion carries, and we'll ask Senator Hansel to be our carrier on that one, too. We do have one more person to testify on House Bill 3348. Greg Leo, if you'd like to come forward.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the Senate Rules Committee, for the record, my name is Greg Leo. I am a loyal duck and a amateur historian, is the way I'd describe it. This bill is, you know, HB 3348, is, I think, a little bit of both. It's both showing one of the great fight songs in American college life, but also shows a history, a 100-year history next year, which really spans time and tells a lot about Oregon and the University of Oregon. I've submitted for the record testimony from Paul Clifford, who is the Vice President of the University of Oregon for Alumni Affairs, and from Robert Ponto, who is a professor at the music school. In Ponto's testimony, he tells the story of Mighty Oregon, how it was written. It was really based on The Long Way for Tipperary, which is an important World War I song. I think Senator Boquist would appreciate that part of the history. And then, of course, the words were written by a University of Oregon journalism student. As a second-generation duck with a son, my son William will be a freshman there next year. I think this helps carry on the tradition. We hope to make March 10th of each year Mighty Oregon Day in Oregon in order to celebrate that. Thank you, Madam Chair, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Greg. Do we have any questions? I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again.
Thank you, and thank you for not making us sing.
I know. I was wondering if that was going to happen.
I'll
close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3348. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3348 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved House Bill 3348 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Hansel to be our carrier on that one as well. Oyster Week? Okay. Are you, Senator Roblin, are you here for two bills, aren't you?
No, we're the only Oyster Week. I think the other one, if you want me, I'll be here. But I think,
yeah, why don't we ask?
Oyster Week.
No, it's Oyster Week. Okay, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3539. Thank you, Senator Roblin, for waiting so patiently. Erin, could you tell us what we're looking at?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3539 designates the fourth week in April of each year as Oregon Oyster Week.
Okay, thank you, Senator Roblin, for waiting so patiently.
No
we
problem.
Had House members that had to get back to the floor. So.
I thought he was here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and committee. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin. I am the senator from Senate District 5, which is Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into the valley at Sheridan, and almost a neighbor of Senator Boquist in Fall City. So we in the Coastal Caucus have been talking a lot about having a shellfish initiative, somewhat like Washington's, to talk about the industry that we have in shellfish. And one of the ideas that came up from that and in the House, my two representatives, Gomberg and McEwen, put together the idea of let's have, and a number of our constituents had talked about it, because up and down the coast at the end of April, we have oyster fests in lots of different cities. And I have been a server at a number of them in Charleston because the oyster production has been a big part of the Oregon coast since the mid-1800s. And we have done more recently. Oregon State University has a program at in Newport to continue to make sure that we have the variety of oysters and to grow them bigger and better. But they also took on a really interesting project a few years ago to reintroduce the Olympia oyster, which is the traditional oyster. It's a much smaller one that used to be in all of our bays and inlets and now is having a resurgence in large part because of the help from Oregon State University to bring this oyster back. And so they're showing up in places around our bays, which is really, really important to us. So what we've asked for in our in House Bill 3539 is to designate the fourth week in April of each year as the Oregon Oyster Week. Just one other little thing. The oysters have kind of been the canary in the mine with regard to ocean acidification on the coast. We had a 2007, we had a big die-out of oysters on the whole West Coast, and we couldn't produce them. And we have a little place down in Neatarts Bay, Whiskey Creek Hatchery, which produces most of the oyster a larva for the West Coast for small places. And they lost almost their whole stock, and everybody was trying to figure out what to do. They couldn't figure it out. They invited Oregon State to come over, and Oregon State University professors figured out that it was the acidification in the water that created an impossibility to form the shell, because it got dissolved as fast as it was being produced, and that caused the die-off. So they developed a new machine called the Burkulator, which they like to call it the Burkulator, after the professor who did the work, and it takes seawater in and changes the salinity of it, pH of it, and makes it perfect for growing oysters. They're selling more oyster larvae this year than they've ever done. And the industry is succeeding now, but we've still got a problem. As they explained to me, the next 50 years, the water will only get worse, because this is old water. We have upwelling in the ocean off the coast. And so the water we get each year that's refreshed comes from the bottom of the ocean. And it's been there for a long time. And so by talking about Oyster Week and bringing that into people's minds, we think that it shows to us that we've got some amazing people here answering the problems that propose and come up, and industries that have survived here since the mid-1800s, continuing to flourish because of things like the university people who were there to work with us to make sure those things get done and that we address problems as they arise. It has been interesting for me in this district to start to learn more about things. I did not know of the Whiskey Creek hatchery until I started running for the Senate. I probably should have, but because of its importance to the oyster industry in our state. I would encourage you to pass 3539 and identify April, the last fourth week in April, as Oyster Week for Oregon.
Okay, Senator Boquist has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, you just said we were eating them in the fall. Why the fourth week of April?
I think it was the only day that we could all agree on. So I think that's
yeah, bill, right? That too, actually.
Hence the bill. There are some other reasons. That's generally when they start doing a lot of the harvesting and other kinds of stuff. And one of the things you don't want to do is harvest when there's red tides and other kinds of things, because the oysters have a problem. And so there's different times of the year when it's much more likely that you're going to have an easy time to get oysters.
In follow-up?
Yes, go
from
ahead.
My other committee. Did I understand you correctly to say that the acidity pH problem is because the as the water is being churned in the ocean, we're bringing up water off the bottom of the ocean. Does Oregon State figured out that is this like a cyclic?
No, they think that they actually believe that there's been carbon being sinked into the ocean, making this low-level acidic water for a long time. And that what my one guy at the Pacific said, the person that owns the hatchery, he said, they've given me a lot of hope, because they've said, this is the best water you're going to get for a while. It's taken this water 50 years to get down there. The next level will probably have it as well. But we are finding some really interesting things. One that shocked me, the best time to take water out of Neatarts Bay to get the best water is in a sunny afternoon. And I could think, why is that? And he says, well, we've got a lot of, we're doing better with our eelgrass and all this other kind of stuff. It sucks in carbon, so if it has this kind of water, it takes the carbon dioxide, because it's a plant, and makes other stuff with it. And so the water is much clearer of carbon dioxide and all those other kinds of stuff, making the acid. And so our better water, less acidic, is in a bright, sunny day with all this grass growing. And he said, we don't even have to do anything with that. It works pretty well. So interesting little things we're finding out. But yes, he believes there's another 50 years of bad water before anything could change. It might continue, but we need to continue to find ways in which we can take this one little particular time when they're trying to form into little teeny creatures. And if you go by the shop and you want to look in the microscope and see this little guy swimming around, it's pretty interesting, and that this acidic ocean is causing their shells to not be able to form.
Right, because with the massive volcano along the Cascadia right
anytime.
Now, it's going to put more carbon out of the sky. It's going to put more carbon in that bottom layer. I would expect it's going to be an interesting problem.
You'll watch those things go up and down, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Senator Boquist. Any other questions for Senator Roblin? I don't see any other questions for you. Why don't you stay put, though, because I think we'll go to the other bill and just ask you to say a word about that as soon as we move this one. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3539, open a work session on House Bill 3539, and Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3539 to the floor with the do pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3539 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. We'll ask Senator Roblin to be our carrier on the floor. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 3539. And I'll open a work session on House Bill 2655A. And members, you will remember that we've carried this over for the last couple of hearings, and now I think the bill is ready to work. So, Erin, do you want to briefly tell us what it is, and then I'll ask Senator Roblin to say a word about it, too.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2655 directs State Board of Education to adopt specified standards related to student education records, provides that parents and adult students have right to excuse students from statewide standardized summative assessment, and that school districts must provide notice of that right to parents at beginning of school year, mandates that school district or public charter school shall provide notice of opt-out option, mandates specified study time for excused students, mandates notice of information about summative assessments, including dates of assessments, class time required for administration of assessments, and information relating to assessment results be sent to parents and adult students at least 30 days prior to administration of assessments. Details the Oregon Department of Education's process in case of school performance report being negatively impacted by individuals being excused from the assessments, sunsets portion of the measure relating to reason for excuse after 6 years. The measure does contain an emergency clause. You have a dash A15 amendment. The A15 amendment allows its school district and public charter school is not required to provide notice about statewide assessments at beginning of 2015-2016 school year, must ensure notice is provided beginning in 2016-17 school year, and remove the emergency clause. You do have a no revenue impact. A fiscal statement was issued on the A15 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And Senator Roblin, this came from the Education Committee originally, and then I know you've been doing a lot of work on it since that. So would you like to just say a word
about
it?
Yeah, it came from the Education Department to the floor, and we sent it back because we wanted to remove the emergency clause for a number of different reasons. It gives districts and the state time to have conversations with people in their districts, which I think is a really important part of this bill. What we're asking for is the ability to allow parents to understand the processes. We've always been an opt-out state. We had different things with respect to our opt-out. If you had a IEP or a special needs student, that was one of the options that could allow you to opt out. The other option was if you had a religious belief that you felt would be a problem for your child to take tests. Those two opt-out things were what made us an opt-out state. What this bill does in its essence is just basically say parents can make some decisions for their own kids with respect to what's important to them, and they can choose to opt out of this a particular test, summative assessment. Summative assessments are made basically on an annual basis to figure out how the whole system is working. And I think that from my perspective, summative assessments are a good thing to do. They help schools and people understand how they're used is important. Understanding assessment is really important, and we have a number of bills and a number of activities that are happening around the state to talk about formative and a summative assessment so that people have a better idea of what's happening with their own children and how those assessments can be used effectively to make things happen. One of those assessments that we've had for a long time is the ACT and the SAT. If you talk to people at SAT, we use their tests for a lot of things that they weren't designed to be used for, and that is because we don't really understand the summative and formative assessment nature of a lot of tests. I would hope that as the next part of the year goes on, so we aren't going to be sending out that first announcement that was in the original bill, that during that time, communities will have real conversations about why we're doing what we're doing and what kind of information we want and how do we make this system work for all students. And that's my hope and goal. I think that's why it came back to you to have the emergency clause removed and changed. I look forward to the opportunity on the floor, and I think I was the carrier before. I hope to be the carrier again. And there are other people here who could talk more directly about that the amendments than I do, because I didn't draft all of them. And it got much more complicated than I thought it was, because there's a lot of intertwined stuff. And we want the department to be able to do the work that they need to do, even though there's not an emergency clause. So they'll be ready when the next year starts, when the appropriate time for parents and others to have the conversation with their students and decide if they're going to opt out or not.
Okay. Well, thank you, Senator Rublin, for all of your hard work on this and for being here and being willing to carry the bill on the floor. Did we have any questions for Senator Rublin? Okay, I don't see any questions for you. Thank you. And we are in a work session, members, unless we need additional testimony. I think the bill is ready to...
Is anyone else signed up?
No. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on House Bill 2655?
They're leaving the room.
They're leaving the room. Right. Well. Okay, so no.
So I'm just to clarify, my understanding is just looking at the amendment, the basic is it moves it down. The reason we take the emergency clause and then move it down a year so that everybody has time to kind of figure out how to make
exactly.
the process work. Okay, got it.
That's the intention.
Which is the intent.
Okay, Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -A15 amendment to House Bill 2655.
Senator Farrioli moves the -A15 amendment to House Bill 2655. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2655A with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved House Bill 2655A with a due pass as amended recommendation to the floor. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Rublin has volunteered to be our carrier, and so we will assign it to him. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2655. Now,
two more people sign up.
Okay. Okay, so I'll open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 25. And Erin, you want to tell us about this one?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 25 honors Shirley Kalkoven.
We do have one person here to testify, and it's Barbara Trout. And welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Barbara Trout in years.
Thank you for waiting so patiently.
Senator Boquist. Senator Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Trout, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Representative Deborah Boone, who's the sponsor of the committee but's on the House floor. I live in Tillamook County and have personally known Shirley Kalkoven for 25 years, and I can attest she was an incredible community service. A servant. As you can see in HCR 25, she served the community of Nehalem on their city council and as mayor for two decades. If something was good for her community, the region, or the state, Shirley was involved. Before she moved to Nehalem, her family lived in Beaverton, where she was active on the school board and PTA. In Nehalem, in addition to city government, she helped with the North County Food Bank, the Lower Nehalem Watershed Council, and the Manzanita Women's Club. At the county level, she chaired the Tillamook County Futures Council, the Tillamook County Emergency Warning Task Force, and served on the Tillamook County Budget Committee. Regionally, she worked on economic development issues with the Columbia Pacific Economic Development District, Northwest Oregon Economic Alliance, and the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association. Economic well-being depends on effective transportation, and Shirley served on the Northwest Oregon Area Commission on Transportation, the ODOT Stakeholder and Freight Advisory Committees, as well as the Final Review Committees for Connect Oregon 2 through 5. Statewide, she was active with the Oregon Mayors Association and League of Oregon Cities. She spent lots of time in Salem working on various issues. As Governor Brown noted in her comments for Shirley's celebration of life, Shirley Kalkoven was the epitome of an outstanding public servant. I hope you will agree with the governor and support HCR 25 honoring Shirley Kalkoven. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for being here on behalf of Representative Boone and bringing this to us. Do we have any questions? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again
thank
for your
you.
Testimony. I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 25. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 25 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved House Concurrent Resolution 25 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. I see that Senator Johnson is the Senate sponsor, so we'll ask her to carry this on the floor, and I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 25. And I'll open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 27 and call Marla Ray forward. And Erin, would you like to tell us about this one?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 27 honors Dave Fohmeyer.
Thank you, Erin, and thank you, Marla, for waiting so patiently.
Chair and members of the committee, Marla Ray, for your record, in recognition of your time and on behalf of the Fohmeyer family, thank you for considering his in recognizing his many contributions to his native state of Oregon. More will be said, I'm sure, on the Senate floor.
Okay, I'm sure indeed there's a lot to say about Dave Fohmeyer. Thank you, Marla, for your testimony. Is there any discussion? I mean, no questions. Okay, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 27.
Too many bills in a row here.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I'm getting a little loopy. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 27, to the floor with the adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved House Concurrent Resolution 27 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And I think the University of Oregon is in Senator Beyer's district. So why don't we ask Senator Beyer, since there's not a Senate sponsor on this at all, we'll ask Senator Beyer, and we can always change that if somebody else pops up. So I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 27. I think we don't have anybody else signed up to testify on any of our other resolutions, so let's just knock those out. Starting with, I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 19.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 19 congratulates the 2014 University of Oregon Ducks football team on their victory at the Rose Bowl. It's my understanding that there will be a Ducks Day coming up on the 11th, and so we would like to get this to the floors to honor them on the 11th.
Okay, so we're in a work session. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 19 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 19 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
I see lots of senator sponsors.
Yes, we have. We do have.
Plus we have that other senator, the mighty senator.
The mighty.
Whatever his name was, I don't remember his name.
Yes.
He might be interested, too.
Okay. Okay, any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Hansel actually isn't a sponsor of this, but it certainly fits with all the others that he's doing. So why don't we ask Senator Hansel
to be our sponsor.
And I'll close the work session on HCR 19 and open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 24. Erin?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 24 honors Gretchen Kafori.
Thank you very much, Erin. And Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Discussion. There's obviously a ton to say about Gretchen Kafori, who served in the legislature and did pioneering work here, served on the Multnomah County Commission and on the Portland City Council, and after that went on to a career as a faculty member at Portland State University. She was a mentor and a leader and an inspiration to generations of women in public service, politics, and advocacy, including me and many, many others. So certainly it was her loss, her untimely death was way too soon. She did a great deal of good while she was here, and so I would be thrilled to carry this on the floor. Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move HCR 29 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli, 24?
24, please.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 24 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? The motion carries, and the chair will carry this one on the floor. And I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 24 and open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 29.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 29 congratulates the South Salem High School girls varsity basketball team on their 2015 state championship. This measure does come to you from Representative Hack, who could not be with us. She is on the floor right now, but she did want to make sure we knew she wanted to be here in spirit, and that it is her and Senator Winter's measure to send and honor a high school in their district.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. So we are in a work session. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I now move HCR 29 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Great. Senator Farioli moves HCR 29 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries, and we'll ask Senator Winters to carry this one on the floor, and I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 29. I think that brings us to Senate Bill 968. We do need to get Senator Edwards here, who's here earlier. So how about if we put the committee in recess for 5 minutes, and we'll see if we can get him here. Committee is in recess. Open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 968. And Senator Edwards, why don't you come forward? And Aaron, could you just tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 968 established the state preemption of local governmental authority to mandate work schedule requirements until adjournment of 2017 regular session of Legislative Assembly. It does provide exception, and there is an emergency clause on this measure. You have a no revenue, and we have a no fiscal impact on the measure.
Okay, thank you, Aaron. And Senator Edwards, thank you. I know you were here earlier, and thank you for rushing down to tell us about your bill.
Okay, so thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator from Eugene. I represent a bunch of Eugene, most of Eugene, and Junction City in the Oregon Senate. And I bring to you Senate Bill 968, and effectively what Senate Bill 968 does is it creates a two-year timeout on local government's ability to enact policies on work schedules. So this came out of the negotiations around the paid sick leave policy, and as we saw about how paid sick leave rolled out, it was, you know, Portland, then Eugene, different standards, and then us trying to create something statewide while also reconciling these different types of policies at the local level. And that added a level of complexity to the issue. And some of us believe that on some issues, not all issues, but on some issues, a statewide standard just works better. So I started at a place where what I really wanted was a bill that preempted more issues than just work scheduling, and what I was shooting for was a delayed implementation, which would say a local government could do whatever they wanted to do, but it wouldn't go into effect until after the next legislative session, so we could at least see what local governments are doing and reconcile the hodgepodge if we needed to. Come to find out, the business community didn't like that, and labor advocates didn't like that. So nobody liked it except for Chris Edwards. So we didn't move forward with that. And they just didn't like it for different reasons. So that's why I still think it's the best policy, probably. But so what we ended up with is there's a lot of discussion about really there's a lot of interest, I think, by advocates statewide on taking up the issue, taking up some of the work schedule issues. I myself share some of that interest, and I think that, and in fact, am looking forward to engaging on those issues in the interim, so that we can address these issues in the next legislature. So this creates a timeout statewide so that we don't end up with the Portland, Eugene, Corvallis, Beaverton, Ashland, Bend, you know, different policies all around, and then trying to be figuring out what to do with all these different policies statewide when we come back. So that's the bill. That's what it does. And happy to answer any questions.
So it sounds like, Senator Edwards, your intention is to participate in a discussion about possible statewide legislation that might address issues of scheduling.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of validity to the concerns that some of those bills that were brought this session were, and proposed ordinances that I've just heard about. I think that there's a lot of validity to those concerns. I also believe that, you know, what, say, a retail industry downtown Portland might be experiencing is very different from the conditions that, you know, long-haul truckers experience, and that are very different from, say, you know, the mill, you know, forest products mill industry that's driven by commodity prices, and when they have to shut down, they have to shut down. And, you know, we just have a big diversity of industries across the state, and hopefully we can reach some solutions that, like, everybody, you know, that we can work on. And if we don't, and if we can't reach that statewide solution, then all bets are off. And come August 31st, 2017, it'll be back to the current state, which is that, you know, cities or counties could do their own thing.
Well, actually, I think that this preemption would expire at sine die of the 2017 session, and then the bill itself is deleted from the statutes on August 31st. So I suppose if we were still in session on August 31st of 2017, the bill would go away. But I think that's the intention, is to have it expire at sine die of 2017.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any questions for Senator Edwards? Okay, it looks like Senator Farioli will wait to ask his questions
on the floor.
Yes, Senator Boqvist.
I just have a comment. I mean, I'm not sure I agree or disagree with the end state, but I certainly agree with Senator Edwards. He and I experienced this two or three times in the last week in Revenue and Finance, that there's a whole series of issues that need to be resolved, and taking a quick time out of like 2 years before people make rash decisions is a very good idea.
Good. Okay, thank you, Senator Boqvist, for your comment. I don't see any more questions for you, Senator Edwards. So I'll close the public. Well, I guess I opened a work session already. I'll close the public hearing. And Senator Farioli, we're in a work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 968 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 968 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I do want to point out that there is some written testimony on OLIS from Family Forward Oregon about this bill, and I think that was the only testimony that we had. I also want to just comment, I'll be voting in favor of this bill today, but I do want to say that I am not supportive in general of preempting local government's authority to take up important and timely issues. So I will be supporting this today, but my clear intention is to join Senator Edwards in embarking on a good faith, robust discussion of statewide legislation in this area. And if we fail to be able to pass any such legislation, that this would basically go back to local jurisdictions with full ability to act after the 2017 session. But I will be supporting the bill today. Any other discussion on the bill? Yes, Senator Burdick.
Yes, I also feel strongly on this issue. I will participate in moving it to the Senate floor so we can have a robust discussion. But my support today may not last very long.
Okay, thank you, Senator Burdick.
Well, I can't wait.
Okay.
I'll vote it out just to see what happens.
Okay. The motion is to send Senate Bill 968 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Edwards, would you be willing to carry this on the floor? Thank you. And Senator Edwards will be our carrier. I'll close the work session on SB 968. And I think we got through everything on our agenda. So with nothing further to come before us today, we're adjourned.
I was in the...
Further to come before us today, we're adjourned.